Greetings, everyone. This is Jonathan Alexander. I am editor of College Composition and Communication, and we are here today with Sarah Klotz, who is the author of Impossible Rhetorics of Survivance at the Carlisle School, 1879 to 1883. Joining me also is Jim Floyd, editorial assistant for the journal. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, not at all. So I'm very interested in hearing a little bit more about what I call the backstory of the article. I always like to ask authors to give us a sense of how you came to this particular research. So maybe you could just summarize what your article is about quickly and how you came to this particular piece.
Sure. So my article is really based in the archival research that I did on the students at the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in pretty much just the first 4 years of the institution, when the boarding school system was really brand new. And so I came to this work partially due to, 15 years ago as an undergraduate, I was trained to be an archival researcher in the feminist tradition, which is really the purpose of which is to do recovery work. So to acknowledge that the texts that end up published and that end up in our literary and our writing canons often can follow the power dynamics of our society. And so there's a lot of silencing that goes on as a result. So I really learned about the archive as a place to go and find those voices that are so extraordinarily important because they have not always made it into our popular imagination, but they have a lot to teach us about sort of structural isms, racism and settler colonialism and gender bias and so on and so forth. So I became really interested in the Carlisle students in particular because while we have really expanded our knowledge of Native American rhetorics and rhetors, such as Zitkala Shah or Luther Standing Bear, Charles Eastman, we haven't done a lot to understand kind of tribal communities and those rhetors who are not the individuals who have kind of been embraced by our canons that now exist.
You articulate so well some of the value that archival research can bring to the field. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about that. Anything you want to say about how archival work can really benefit what we do in composition, but also something surprising in the archive, because I imagine going into an archive is not just a treasure hunt. You're not just looking for the treasure. You're probably always surprised and encountering the unexpected.
Yes, great. Great question. So what can archival work do for us as a field? I think in particular, what we find in 19th century archives are just extraordinary numbers of student texts. And in this archive in particular, it's not only student texts that were collected, it's also photographs of students, letters that they wrote home, compositions within classrooms, multimodal rhetoric. So there's pictographic images, there's all sorts of things. And so what I think that this particular archive does for us as scholars and teachers of writing is it helps us to realize the way that kind of power dynamics and resistance are working in our classrooms. And so in particular, I want us to think about the ethics of language instruction and literacy instruction, both historically and today, because we are still living in a settler colonial system. And our students are still resisting when we as educators are asking them to give up their existing knowledge, their existing culture, their existing languages. And so one of the things that I was really looking for were in a coercive environment, such as an off-reservation boarding school, resistance is difficult. I mean, resistance can get you into a lot of trouble. Corporal punishment being just one of the things that would result from blatant resistance to the curriculum. And so I'm really looking for other ways that students do resist to build that into our knowledge and our practice as teachers and scholars. So that's the first piece. And then the second answer to your question about surprises. I guess in this particular archive of the Carlisle students, what was surprising to me is just the volume of what was collected. I mean, I think we can learn an extraordinary amount, even from the photographic evidence. So Pratt, who was the director of the school, he had a partnership with a photographer who was there on the first day and every day after in the first couple of years of the institution. And so one surprising piece that I talk about in the article, I actually open the article with a picture of a slate. And what's surprising about it is, first of all, it's gone. I mean, this is not something, you would never find a slate with chalk still on it in the archive. So it's really remarkable that this guy just took this perfect photograph. But it's a photograph of a student's slate, and it has all the things you'd expect it to have. Like, it has a math problem, and it has a little composition about apples and trees and little girls and little boys. And then there's a pictographic image of a rider on a horse. And so what's extraordinary about this find is that you can see made material, that students were not absorbing this curriculum without questioning it. They were bringing their own knowledge and their own literacy practices every day. But we just might not always be able to find those literacy practices in sort of the traditional ways that we would find documentation in published books that sit in libraries.
That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. That's great. Jens?
Yeah, you know, Sarah, I'm someone with an interest in this subject matter and in this historical period. So I really appreciated reading your article, particularly, I think, to the point you were making in one of your earlier responses, where, I mean, my familiarity with this historical period is largely through those prominent figures that you mentioned, and frankly, only really through those prominent figures. So it was really, I really appreciated that point you make about, you know, looking to the students and their experiences under this pedagogical regime, not just the prominent figures who wrote about it after the fact, you know, but really trying to kind of expand kind of how we know about this history. And that got me thinking about the audience, and I'm thinking of the audience that you wrote this article for, and maybe just your experiences as the writer putting this together. Did you find yourself thinking a lot about, you know, who would be reading this? Were you writing it more towards people interested in the history, your fellow historians, fellow archival researchers, or were you writing for maybe an audience unfamiliar with that, and maybe thinking more along the lines of, you know, just current teachers of writing? So I'm wondering if you could just talk a bit about kind of how you conceptualize the audience for this piece.
Great. Thanks for the question. So absolutely, I was thinking about archival scholars. I was thinking about my peers who I've worked with. I've been really lucky to work with Malia Powell. I've been really lucky to work with Philip Round, who did really amazing work on how text and print have always been a part of Indian country and life in Indian country, reaching far back before settlement and colonization. So I wanted to engage in that conversation, but I'm also a teacher of writing. And when I wrote the piece, I was teaching developmental writing at a community college in Northern California. And I was also working with the local Maidu communities, trying to figure out essentially why is it so difficult for us at a community college and open access institution to enroll the Native students in our region. And so one of the really important things that I'm hoping to do with my archival work is to really educate teachers of writing about these histories that we're all a part of, and about the kind of baggage that we are maybe not aware of when our students walk into the room, especially Native American students. And then I also wanted to fundamentally challenge this idea that there's developing literacies that our students are bringing with them. And the reason that I want to challenge that notion is because that is exactly the belief that led to the off-reservation boarding school system, that there's an English literacy that's better and that's fundamentally more developed than the existing Indigenous literacies on the continent. And so when we have our students come to us with so many practices and such an extraordinary rich range of communicative forms, and then in our writing classrooms we say, no, but this is how you do it. And those other communicative forms don't belong in this environment. you're actually creating a structure in which it is impossible for students from marginalized groups to thrive, and to be able to use what they know to really enrich their rhetorics and their writing. So I hope that writing teachers will think very carefully about that as well.
It's an important call that you're sending to the field, so we really appreciate it. We've been talking with Sarah Klotz, who is the author of Impossible Rhetorics of Survivance at the Carlisle School, 1879 to 1883. Sarah, thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you.